Well, the Time and Time Project really sort of rose out of an idea we had looking at some of our coroner's records for Lancaster and Morecambe. With coroner's inquests, we don't really, not many of them survive, but we're very lucky to have a good collection from 1896 to the 1930s for Lancaster and Morecambe, because the coroner, Lawrence Holden, who was a local solicitor, he kept the records with his solicitor's records. So we managed to, you know, to rescue them. They survived, and they're all open, even though coroner's records are restricted for 75 years. But because they're open, we sort of thought, well, you know, they're an interesting set of records. They're quite grim and they're quite depressing, as I'm sure you can imagine. But we discovered looking at them that there were stories that emerged from some of them, especially relating to the First World War period, which I think shine a different light on the home front during the First World War. So it really sort of came out of that.
Not only is this just about a historical project as well, but you're working with a poet, you're working with an artist, getting other people involved in the creative arts to tell these stories.
We are. We thought it was a really great way of running a creative writing project, and we wanted particularly to work with young people because a lot of the people involved in these stories were quite young, and there were themes in there that we thought that perhaps young people could relate to. And it might make them think about their community, about the First World War, a little differently. And so we got a writer on board called Sarah Hymas, who's worked with Litfest before, and she's a fantastic writer, and she's going to lead the project. And as you say, we've got Lisa Wigham, who's a local artist, who's going to help us create an art installation out of the work next year.
It all gets started on Monday, and it's going to be running throughout the year, so yeah. There's going to be a series of workshops that people can get involved in.
There are, yes. Mainly the workshops up to Christmas and through to April are for young people. They'll be taking place at Morecambe Library for the most part, although we are going to have a workshop at Lancashire Archives on the 13th of December. And there will be different themes to the workshop, so we'll also have people coming in to talk about different things to do with the First World War. And then in the new year we'll have some open workshops for anyone to attend. So all the dates are on the website, dates and times. But it all starts on Monday. As part of Litfest, we have the first workshop at Lancaster Library.
And like you mentioned, you're targeting particularly young people because you think they'll relate to those themes. Mm. Is it important for the future of, you know, commemorating the war, World War One, that we target it on young people because those are the people who are going to pass it on to future generations?
It is. I think it's very important. And I think, it'd be easy to get sort of, I don't know if fatigue is the right word, but with all the First World War and all the military stuff that we're going to have over the next 4 to 5 years, and I think that it's important to sort of connect with the people who are involved, and in that way it sort of brings it alive. And I think it's easy to do that with young people and sort of get them to think about how it impacted on local lives really, as well as those who went away. I know someone was telling me a story recently about how they'd been talking to someone who was helping to clean up the war memorial in Lancaster, and he met this group of young men who were doing this job, and he said, you know what you're doing, you're cleaning up the war memorial. And then they said, oh, well, yeah. He said, well, what do you think about the war? And they were sort of a bit, well, you know, it was a bit daft really, you know, it was a bit stupid, why did they go? And there seems to be this perception of why, because it's hard for us to think back to that time and the sense of duty that people had, and the different ideas that people had, and you know what they believed that they had to do. Nowadays, I don't think we would go quite so willingly into anything like that. But he got some material and he talked to them about the war, and he showed them the names of the people on the war memorial and talked about them as individuals. And these young men were really interested by the end of it. They were really engaged. And I think it's just making those connections and making them realise that they were real people who had stories, had families, who weren't that different to us now, but just had this stronger sense of duty and, you know, that they had to go. And of course they didn't know what was going to happen when they went.
So you've mentioned there's a lot of local stories involved in this project and that you've been investigating as well. So what are some of the highlights for you?
I think that the main one for me, and the one that sparked it all off, is the story of Eva Annie Wilcox. She was a young woman, she was only 21, she came from Sheffield, but like so many people, I may be wrong, but I'm sure Morecambe was known as Little Yorkshire at times because so many people came from Yorkshire on their holidays. and that's what her family did. And she must have met a local man called George Wallace. He was a munitions worker, and at some point she broke it off. We know this from the witness statements in the file. And then she just turned up out of the blue and went to see George Wallace. They walked from Skirton to, well, the munitions factory up at Caton, down to Morecambe. What they talked about, we don't know. But shortly after that, she jumped off the end of the old West End pier. And it's such a sad story, because she was found with a postcard underneath her blouse with a picture of the soldier on one side, and on the other side she'd written, "George Wallace, the only boy I ever loved." And then we found out, you know, from the files that it was thought she was pregnant. And, you know, it's such a sad tale. And there's so much there that you don't know, but you could fill in with sort of, you know, creativity. You could sort of think about, you know, the story. I have since found out, looking at Ancestry, that she also had a twin sister, which opens out the story completely. You know, it just, that actually, you know, really shocked me. I thought, great, you know, she had a twin sister back in Sheffield. So, and then there's the HMS Champagne, which was torpedoed off the Isle of Man. That's quite well documented. You can find all sorts of information about that. But we have the files of four of the sailors who washed up along the coast. And I think there's a lot of imagery with that for me, because it's just the idea of the tide bringing these people in along the, you know, the seafront onto the beaches, the beautiful bay in the distance, the fact that the war's just been brought right into Morecambe, and yet, you know, the main action is so far away, but here it is, the war is actually now washed up on the beach. And again, you know, one of them was only 18, and he had a letter from his sweetheart in his pocket and a ring, so he must have been engaged, you know, there's that sort of thing. And then we found another one he was an unidentified body, which, you know, this is where we get into the slightly grim and gruesome side of things, because he'd been washed up on the beach near Bear. And all that was on him was a rosary, a Catholic prayer book, a steam packet ticket from Ireland, and a recruitment pass. So this young man must have been on his way from Ireland to join up. They did eventually find out who it was. His father had read in the paper and had realised his son hadn't been in contact and was missing, so he identified him in the end. But there's this, you know, what's intriguing about that is not even so much the body on the beach, it's all these little things that, you know, tell the story of how he might have got there. It's quite intriguing. And then we've got coroner's files for White Lund, the big explosion that took place there. And of course, one of them was unidentified, so there's a bit of a mystery there. And some of the women we've got coroner's files for two women who died of TNT poisoning, one lady who was killed by a crane, another one who was killed when a shell fell on her. And I think sometimes we forget the contribution that they made, not just the women, but the men who worked in the munitions factories. It was an incredibly dangerous job, and their sacrifice in some ways was just as great as those who went to the front.
Did I read on your website as well, there's a story about a boxer, a local boxer?
There is, yeah. He was in the Manchester Regiment, and they were billeted in Morecambe, and it was just a friendly boxing match, and they were going to 11 rounds. They got to the 11th round, and then just, you know, one bad hit, and he was killed, and he hadn't even got to the front. But there's something about that, you know, just this situation where the regiment's having a bit of a friendly boxing match, and, you know, he loses his life that way in Morecambe. And his gravestone is in Torresham Cemetery, I think. Yeah, so we could actually go and see that.
But these are the casualties that aren't listed on war memorials. These are the ones that aren't registered and remembered on, say, the 11th of November, because these are just in coroner's files. But these are victims of the war.
They are, yes. And, I mean, apart from, I suppose, the HMS Champagne, but the others, yeah, certainly they're civilians, and their lives are tangled up in the war, and they've died almost, you know, as a direct result. I mean, there's another case of a young man in Lancaster who took his own life because he'd been rejected on medical grounds. And without the war, these people would have still been alive. So, yeah, and in a way, it's a nice way to remember them, to sort of tell their stories.
So, moving forward, next summer, hopefully, the exhibition will be on a bit of a roadshow, and hopefully people have a lot to look forward to with the Time and Tide Project.
They do, yes. And you don't have to have any previous experience of writing. all ages welcome to the open workshops, and equally the young people. You don't need any experience, so if you just fancy having a go and if you think it sounds interesting and you just want to come along and find out more about it, then please do. We will be doing some making workshops, so you will get the opportunity to work with an artist to create something, and that will go on tour along the bay, and there will also hopefully be a big event attached to the West End Festival.